You're listening to The Public Eye right here on 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at wicn.org. Good evening, I'm Al Vona, host of The Public Eye. So nice to have you with us. Hey, who doesn't feel that motivation is important in life? Whether it's in the workplace or in your personal life, even within relationships with one another, motivation, passion, the things that we've been taught, the things that we've been told are vitally important to how we react in our everyday lives, but also in the success that we all attain in our lives. But is all of this true? Not necessarily. There's another aspect to all of this, and that's why my guest today is educator and author Bobby Hoffman. His new book is The Paradox of Passion, How Rewards Covertly Control Motivation. So for the next half hour, we'll be talking with Bobby Hoffman about the take that he has and the reasons for writing the book. And I think you'll find that there's some very interesting points to this particular book. Bobby, nice to have you with us.
It's great to be here, Al. Good evening.
This is
looking forward.
Yeah, I'm glad to got you on because when I was growing up, and I grew up in a family business, but not just in business, but it was in school. It was as a teenager. Hey, if you want to get the right girl, you gotta be motivated, and you gotta have this, and you gotta have that skill, and this that, and at the end of the day. I don't know about other people, Bobby, but I certainly felt overwhelmed, and I thought, is this really the right approach? I mean, what if you don't achieve certain things? What if you don't live up to certain standards? Are you then a failure? And many of us like to just tear into our own personal lives and take ourselves down, which is not really what you should be doing. I think everybody is motivated by different things, but you've taken a formula that has been part of most people's lives, at least here in the United States, which is, hey, if you get involved in something that you're passionate about, work, social life, otherwise, then that's really the key to success. Not necessarily, right?
Well, no, actually, I like to use the analogy. It's like, going out in the sun is really good for you too. But if you stay out there for too many hours, what happens? You get sunburn. And it really hurts, and motivation kind of and especially passion follows a similar type trajectory, because we believe that we should be acting in a certain way, and on paper it sounds good, and it is wonderful to have passion, but we have to realize that passion is not sustainable over the long term. And when we get and encounter the natural highs and lows of motivation without understanding how the brain works, and we're just focusing on passion, we really risk using the wrong strategies to push forward. As you just described, motivation is not something that's consistent for us, but it has almost like a cycle. It's kind of like when you go to the gym and you work out, and you're going strong, and you're getting some. You start to get tired. You start to lose your energy. And sometimes we actually crash. We have a motivational crash, and you start thinking to yourself, I don't know what to do next, or I feel so empty, and I'm not content. And a lot of that has to do with how your brain works. So if you're operating under this conception that it's all about passion, I ask you and I ask your listeners, what do you do when that passion goes away?
I know from a personal point of view that sometimes we put so much, because of that, and you're right, we put so much pressure on one another, on ourselves especially, that it can really diminish our abilities to achieve anything. Like you said, at the end of the day, you just said, hey, I just want to lock myself in my room, just leave me alone for the next 8 hours. I need to regroup here. What, Bobby, here's one of the things that I have found that many organizations, especially in the business world, money, if you have any kind of passion, and then they start to push the idea that, if you achieve certain goals, you'll be rewarded with a financial. there's nobody in the world that isn't enticed by that, but not everybody can achieve that goal. So not only do they lose out on perhaps a financial compensation because they didn't reach a certain milestone, but then they've beaten themselves up because they didn't get as far as the next person. So I see it as a double whammy that sometimes this can really do somebody in, right?
Well, you've hit on a number of really important issues here, some of those being, you know, how do we determine our goals and how do we measure our success towards reaching them? But you've also hit on what happens when we get to that point of not being satisfied. It does lead to feelings of frustration, self-doubt, anxiety, and sometimes even depression. But the third thing that you said that is really key, we go and regroup. But here is really where that sword becomes really sharp, because not everyone regroups in ways that are productive, and not everyone regroups in ways that are neurologically consistent with how our brain works. And those ways can be very hazardous. And just think about your own personal frustrations or those of the people around you. If you get upset and depressed, what do? Sometimes you go to sleep. Sometimes you eat. Sometimes you engage in a lot of very unproductive behaviors because we don't necessarily know the strategies to use. So it's actually a very, very complex issue that kind of gets, we'll say, clouded by popular narratives and opinions from people that don't really know all of the dynamics, especially on the neuropsychology side, and which ultimately our biology dictates how we respond to motivational deficits. So you've opened up the big can of worms, Al.
What well, we
direction you want to take that, please do.
Well, Bobby, conversely, and I think it goes both ways, there's the, the motivation part of it. And then there's I've heard this term since I was a kid. If you didn't achieve a certain level, whether it be in athletics, whether it be in a scholastic or an educational setting or in the workplace, just in social circles, then this label that's been placed on, and we do this to unmotivated, Al's unmotivated, Bobby's unmotivated, uh-huh. Therefore he will never be successful. That can only bring someone down. I mean, that is not good for someone's ego, right?
No, it's horrible. And you've actually hit on one of my pet peeves. And I always say, and there's even a chapter in my book, it's called Labels Belong on Cans, Not People. Because what happens is the person begins to believe and assume the qualities that are associated with the label. But when it comes to motivation and how we navigate the world, the label is often wrong, and especially what I call is the myth of the unmotivated. People aren't unmotivated. They're just not motivated in necessarily the same ways that you or I may think they should be motivated. They may not have academic motivation or work motivation, but they are indeed motivated unless they are dead. And the trap that a lot of people fall into when they reach some of these motivational lows is reflecting to themselves. And if they're reflecting, that's actually a very positive step. But reflecting to themselves, well, I'm not as good as my next door neighbor, or I went to college and I should be making more money, or I should have more friends, or I should be accomplishing more in my life. So that, in motivation psychology, we call that social comparison. And social comparison is a killer, because you get to the point where you just can't compete psychologically, and your frame of reference is not consistent with how your brain operates, because your brain wants and is always making these value comparisons as we navigate through life. And what does that mean? That means if you turn to the left and you see a lion, your brain's going to say, oh, maybe I should go to the right. It's better off for me. So, and then we turn towards the right and we start making progress. And I'm giving a very elementary example, but this value proposition happens millions of times a day, literally everything that we do, and we keep updating in our minds the best way to behave. So we don't want to make that comparison to other people. We want to make that comparison to how the world operates in the context of the goals that we want to reach. And when we start feeling good is when our outcomes are better than we expect, not if our outcomes are better than the person we're comparing ourselves with. Two. So that's a very lethal strategy. And quite frankly, if you think about the motivational speakers in the world and the people that are giving what I call TikTok advice, they will tell you.
Oh, we seem to have lost Bobby.
Bob. It's worked for me. It'll work for you. But that's a very, very flawed theory on so many dimensions. And it gets people in trouble because they'll reach plateaus and they will get frustrated. And then they get into this downward spiral where they're not sure how to manage their motivation and get back to where they need to be.
Yeah, and we've all seen that happen even within our own personal lives. I just want to take a quick pause to remind listeners that you're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. This is The Public Eye. I'm Al Vona, your host. My guest this week is author and educator Dr. Bobby Hoffman. His book, The Paradox of Passion, what has been part of our DNA, learning that to be successful in almost any aspect of life, passion is indeed the necessary ingredient. Not necessarily true. And Bobby, going back to something that you said just a little while ago, is I think, you know, when I was growing up, we didn't have social media. So I guess, for lack of a better way of putting it, information didn't come in on a 24/7 news cycle. You didn't get it instantaneously on a web page because it wasn't available. And maybe we weren't exposed to so many things. But today, because you were talking about somebody not reaching the same, not achieving something where a coworker, a neighbor, maybe another family member. But today, there's so much pressure on people because they see people from around the world on a 24/7 cycle. I could do that if only I had this, or if I only did this or that. I sometimes think that this interconnectedness, the social media that we see today that has ramped up year after year, makes it equally hard, or I should say doubly hard, especially for someone who maybe wasn't successful the first time out, where a coworker, a family member, or a neighbor was successful the first time out. So do you get a sense that there's more pressure on people today than perhaps 30 or 40 years ago?
I don't know if there's more pressure, but it's tougher to weed through. And you know, you hit on so many really important things here. The first is really you're describing information literacy, when we can separate the evidence-based truth versus opinions. So the passion narrative is very popular. And don't get me wrong, passion is a good thing if you know how to manage it. So I'm not a passion killer, but I am one that advocates managing it consistent with how your brain operates. But what you really hit upon is the core of how a person demonstrates their motivation. And that is through a set of beliefs that really operate below the surface, sometimes unconsciously. And the primary belief that drives our behavior is whether or not we think we can control the environment around us. Now, this doesn't mean control other people, but whether or not we feel we have the capacity, the tools, and the interest to create a course of action to reach our goals, or do we believe we are subject to external forces like the economy and our genetics and heredity and the circumstances of the world that may be perceived as holding us back? So how we believe in terms of our own ability to make progress, and you might have heard of the mindset belief popularized by Carol Dweck. It's related where we think, you know, can I do better? A lot of people put a arbitrary cap on their ability because they lack confidence in terms of their ability to achieve goals. So we've got these a series of self-beliefs that can be stimulating or that can limit our ability substantially. And obviously, if we put these artificial caps on ourselves, our motivation is going to be influenced. Because why bother trying if you don't think you can accomplish the objective?
Exactly.
And social media creates this aura of, I call it mythological passion, where we see people in the media and celebrities, and they appear to be happy and super motivated and say, you can do this too, but it doesn't really work that way.
Yeah, I'm so two things that came to light as you were talking. One is, I think, is key. Confidence. Confidence levels vary from one person to the other. There's not a broad stroke that, you know, hey, we're all born with this amount of confidence. Now you got to utilize it to be successful. That's not true. Everybody's different. The other thing that you mentioned, and that is that what motivates one person to a certain level does not necessarily motivate the next person. It doesn't mean that they're a failure. A perfect example, I know when I go for walks, I'll look at one neighbor's lawn and gardens, and everything looks beautiful, and it's their passion, going back to that word. And the next one doesn't give a hoot. And yet in speaking to either one of them, one says, you know, this is what really keeps me going. This is what I love. And the other one says, I don't care. I'm still as good as that guy over there, and I'm not going to spend my weekends doing what he does or what she does. So you know, just what you were talking about, you know, it's a combination of confidence. It's a combination of what motivates you may not be what motivates me. But sometimes we're told that if we don't all move in the same direction at the same pace at the same time, then you're not likely to be successful. And I think that's not the message to send. But going back to what you put in the book, you know, you talk about it sounds like you have to take the bull by the horns. In other words, you have to sit yourself down and say, okay, look, what's really important to me may not be important to the next person, but that's okay. So now, where does the person go from there? Does this have to be like do you have to brainwash yourself and start all over again from all the things that we've heard about externally and try and find that self-confidence, try and find that self-motivation and then maybe success? Or is that also too much baggage?
No, it's not. I think you're giving a really good description here. The thing I would say about confidence is it's really task-based. In the motivation trade, so to speak, we call that self-efficacy. And we have a very various degrees of confidence or self-efficacy based on the task. So you may feel really good about gardening, but if I ask you, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, how confident do you feel you can fly a 787 jumbo jet, I would hope it'd be different than your confidence to create a nice lavender garden with wildflowers.
Yeah, that plane ain't getting off the ground.
so we want to distinguish that we're, and a lot of people are led to believe that that self-efficacy and confidence is an all-encompassing belief. Either you are or you aren't. So it is task-specific. And I always encourage people to find their niche and to figure out what makes them feel good and what makes them content and pursue that. And that actually, even though it sounds good on paper, if you devote too much time and energy into one particular project, we have something that in conventional terms is called burnout. And that happens because we get to a level of tolerance. It's kind of like eating your first cheeseburger or having your first romantic partner. It never feels the same.
Right.
So we're in this perpetual updating situation. We need to be aware of that. And like you said a few minutes ago, go through that regrouping process, use that strategy, actually take on some discomfort to allow us to get to our longer-term goals. It's really a combination of a lot of different things, but ultimately what you have described in the last few minutes is what we take on ourselves as feeling meaningful and competent, and that competency does change according to the person. Some of us like to be the most friendly person, the most honest person, the smartest person in the room, the richest person in the room. But here's the key. Your brain doesn't care about that choice. Your brain just cares about being satisfied on a reward basis. All of those factors I've just described are equally as potent and likely just as motivating than one another. The brain doesn't look and say, oh, well, you know, I'd rather have this than that. It just wants to be satisfied. And if it's not satisfied, you're going to feel rotten.
Well, Bobby, with a few moments that we've got left, and it sounds like you do have to sit yourself down sometimes, even if it's in your office or a quiet room and block out everything and everybody for a period of time and do some self-analysis and just say, okay, you know, I'm not going to be the star quarterback on my football team. I'm not going to be the top executive in my company. I'm maybe not going to reach the pinnacle of success on Wall Street. But what's really important to me is what matters. Is that sort of what people need to do?
It's certainly a good way to kind of clean the slate and start. I strongly recommend that. And what you're really talking about is what we call self-regulation, and that's when we identify a goal and we plan for it in advance. We anticipate what might happen when we're trying to reach the goal, what peaks and valleys we'll encounter, how to respond to those, and then in the process, we also reflect on the outcomes that we intend to receive and the ones that we actually experience. And that process is highly cathartic and beneficial because it allows us to almost kind of step outside ourselves and kind of say, okay, if I was giving advice to someone, you know, what would I tell them is going to happen along the way? So this personal analysis is actually very, very helpful. And the best part of it is that if you encounter an obstacle, you'll figure out in advance, well, how am I going to deal with this so you don't get to these deep motivational lows where you start getting anxious and depressed about your lack of progress. So there's a reason why top athletes, entertainers, and financiers make billions of dollars, because they have a combination of really, really good genetics and really good motivational planning as well, and practice a lot. And unfortunately, we're not all there, but that doesn't mean we can't be equally or more content with who we are as individuals without being in that high echelon. So I talk about everything we've discussed. I talk about in the Paradox of Passion and all the strategies and really why all of the things that I've said are important and how they operate. So the awareness, and that's what I think you're leading up to, the awareness of what's going on with ourselves motivationally is key to our overall success. And a lot of it just on a day-to-day basis operates on autopilot, and we don't even think about it.
Yeah. Yeah, it all makes sense. I mean, you've got to start by looking within. I know that sounds, that's a cliche. People say, oh, that's very cliche. Well, it is and it isn't. If you don't start by being honest with yourself, a dialogue with yourself, if you will, then I think it's going to be very difficult to get off the ground no matter what you're pursuing. And that's why I think The Paradox of Passion is an interesting book. It's so different because it's saying, look, what you've been taught up until now may not be quite the reasons, you know, may not be the reason why you either are or are not successful. There's a different course of action. So I would certainly urge people, The Paradox of Passion, How Rewards Covertly Control Motivation. The advice and the book is really terrific. My guest has been Bobby Hoffman, the author of the book. And I would certainly urge you to go out and buy this. It doesn't matter where you are in life. Just finding basic happiness. Some people say, oh, I can't be happy. You can be happy. You can do things that you think you can't, but maybe the approach that we've been taught for so long is not necessarily the direction for all of us. Bobby, real quickly, if people want to get more information, maybe reach out to you directly with a question or just to research your background, how might they do that?
I encourage them to do that. They can go to my website, aptly named paradoxofpassion.com. I also have another book called Hack Your Motivation, and they can go to hackyourmotivation.com. And they can certainly email me. I'm not reluctant to give that out. It's bobby.hoffman@ucf.edu. That's ucf.edu. That's my work email at the University of Central Florida. And I will respond to you. So please, I love speaking to people where I can help them improve their lives.
Well, there it is, ladies and gentlemen. There's the offer. And no, Bobby does not make house calls, but that doesn't mean he's not attainable. He can be reached. So, you know, so take the offer.
And I also have a column on psychologytoday.com called Motivate, where they can read 100, over 100 free articles on Psychology Today.
I'm loving it. It's out there. The information's there. Bobby's putting the offer out to you to reach out to him directly, buy the book, and help turn things around in your own personal lives. Again, I want to thank Bobby Hoffman for being my guest this evening on The Public Eye. If you have any questions about the broadcast, you can certainly give us a call here at the studios, the WICN. Our main number is 508-752-0700. You can certainly pose any comments, questions, or feedback to me directly. I certainly welcome that. That's Al Vona, V-U-O-N-A, at WICN.org. For The Public Eye, this is Al Vona. Thank you so much for tuning in.